Angela Harris is a multiple near-death experiencer and has been an experiencer of all things spiritually transformative since she was a child, serving as director of IANS, International Association of Near-Death Studies, Groups and Events, immersed her in narratives and data about STEs, spiritually transformative experiences, which has given Angela depth and breadth of knowledge about these topics. She also serves on the IANS Board of Directors. I met Angela when I attended the IANS conference, and we had some really great conversations, and I'm excited for her to get to share some of her experiences with all of you. Hey, everyone. I'm really excited to let you know about the Science and Spirituality Salons I'm now hosting. During these intimate events, a scientifically verified psychic medium will give all of you readings, and I will give a talk on the science and evidence that changed my mind about an afterlife. This will also be an amazing opportunity to get to meet some of you in person or virtually, and to share more about all the science and data that transformed my worldview and got me through my worst days. These can be hosted in your home, in a nearby cafe with a private room, or they can even be virtual. I've hosted a few already, and they were really special, fascinating, emotional, evidential. So if you're interested in getting a small group together over dinner, brunch, drinks, coffee, to learn more about the science and to get evidential medium readings, send me an email at hello@wtfjusthappened.net and put science and spirituality in the title. So a lot of you have reached out saying you wish there were full videos of all episodes, and I have been posting videos, but with a still frame, not with people. And I did some research and learned how to do some better quality video editing. So going forward, for most of the episodes, you will now be able to watch them in full video on YouTube, so you can see what the guest looks like. And I definitely would love your feedback on any of the video episodes. You'll be able to watch this full talk on YouTube. And I'm also going to go back through and edit and post older episodes in full video on YouTube. I often didn't record video for the earliest episodes, so I won't be able to edit all of the past episodes into video, but I'll do the ones I can. It's going to take some time, so they'll be rolled out slowly, but I am getting to them. And any of you who see them, I would love your opinions and any feedback. And thank you so much for taking the time to give feedback and your opinions. I really love hearing from all of you. Welcome to What the Fuck Just Happened. I'm your host, Liz Enten. If you listened to the intro, you know my story. If not, here's a brief summary. I'm a science-y skeptic, and when my dad died, I took a shot in the dark and decided to investigate if there was any possible evidence of an afterlife. I assumed that was as realistic as Santa Claus, but I was desperate. However, I was so blown away by what I discovered that I wrote a book and launched this podcast. In this podcast, I'll be talking to some fairly normal people about some really weird shit. I speak with everyone from psychic mediums and afterlife researchers to ordinary people who've had some inexplicable experiences. So come, listen. There's no need to draw any final conclusions. Keep an open mind and wonder, what the fuck just happened? Hi, today I am speaking with Angela Harris. She is Director of Events and on the board at IANS, International Association of Near-Death Studies, and I met her at the conference and really excited to speak with her today. So welcome, Angela.
Thank you, Liz. It's wonderful to be here. And I really want to thank you for serving in this space and creating a place for us to talk about these things and share it with people who, you know, are outside of the IANS community so that they can find some peace and understanding.
I want to thank you for sharing your story and for putting IANS together because, you know, for someone like me who tends to be on the skeptical side, who had tremendous loss and more losses since then, just, you know, when I go to the conferences and meeting the people and hearing the stories, it's absolutely life transformative. How did you get involved with IANS?
Well, on May 15th, 2015, I had a near-death experience. Before that, I had bumped into books. I had bumped into interviews on shows like The Today Show or Good Morning America with, I remember Nancy Rines was one person. And, you know, I always thought, oh, that's interesting. It's probably, you know, just something that's happening with the brain at death. And they're seeing these visions. And I went on with my life and I did not spend any time at all really thinking about it, studying it, because I didn't have a reason to. So that all changed on May 15th. I had a medical exam, the point of which is actually to pass out. That's how you kind of prove that you have what they were trying to diagnose, which is a neurological disorder. And it's called a tilt table. I died on the tilt table for about 30 seconds, and then I revived myself. So while I was gone here for 30 seconds, which doesn't seem like long until you count it out. So my husband was standing there watching, so you can imagine standing there for a long 30 seconds while your wife is dead. I saw and did so much on the other side. It was truly life-changing. It was an awakening for sure. It awakened me to the reality of who I truly am, that I am here living this life and under a veil, which makes me believe that this is all that there is. But when I was on the other side, I saw that that is not the case at all. In that experience stood in what people would call the Akashic Records, the Book of Life. There are a lot of different names for it, but it was like standing in a river of information, and I could see the past, I could see the future according to this lifespan. I could see that I go in and out of different lives. I could see that the people in my life now, in this existence, do the same thing. And I also saw that parts of my soul, connected parts of me, exist within other bodies on other planets in very different looking bodies. I also saw the futures of my children while I was there. And it's as you can imagine, standing in a flowing river of all the information that there is or was at that time, I'm not really sure. I experienced a lot returned to my memory. And in that, it's a very long story to share. It's actually available on the IANS YouTube channel under the live tab. So it's like an hour and a half long and it doesn't even cover everything that I wanted to talk about. So yeah, I had a near-death experience and it profoundly changed me. I wouldn't say it transformed who I am. I'm not that much different of a person than I was before. What I do is not that different. How I interact with people is different. So what I'm thinking about, Liz, is that some of the experiences I've seen, people were like profoundly transformed, right? So their life is completely different. What they were doing before, they're no longer doing. They're doing something entirely different. The way they behaved before is entirely different. Not really a different person, but it profoundly changed the way I think and interact and behave with people.
So it was 30 seconds here, but it sounds like what you learned and experienced was significantly more than 30 seconds there.
Yes, I would say so. You know, that's one of the things that I remembered on the other side is that time is something that we have here Space, in a way, is something that we have here. When you're on the other side, it's entirely different, entirely different. So, for example, experiencing time on the other side is more an aspect of looking into these lives where we're living in an incarnated body. But when you're in your just soul self, what I experienced is that that's just, time is just a construct that we use to have these experiences, to learn and to grow in the incarnated body. So yes, I might say that it felt like a longer period of time, but there was no time. I was just there doing what I was doing. You know, it was a shock when I got to the other side. I had that moment of, whoa, wait, I think I'm dead. And then looking back at my body and my family here, and then just thinking, you know, having these thoughts of, oh, wait, I remember this. Oh, what about that? And I would just go and remember those things and re-experience those things. And so I didn't have a feeling of time because my mind was busy just remembering and being and revisiting in that moment. But yes, I mean, looking back on it and feeling it from this human self definitely felt like a longer period of time.
And so one thing I know I'll hear some people say when you go to the other side, we're all one, which maybe some people like, I think that sounds really scary. I'm like, I want my loved ones to be themselves. I want to be me. That sounds horrible. But it sounds like you were still you as an individual. Would you say that?
Yeah, I would say that. When I popped out of my body, I went into the tunnel and I was there with my life guide beside me. And then when I arrived in, you know, the welcoming station, which was the bright white light space, my family was there and they were all their individual selves. So when I saw my mother-in-law, she looked like my mother-in-law. She was my mother-in-law. Her personality was the same personality. The same with all my other family members. And I felt like Angela. Now, some people have said, and I think I kind of connect with it, right? That I didn't fully go to the other side. I didn't fully transition. It was more of a waiting space, you know, like a welcoming area. And I wasn't meant to stay in that then, as far as, you know, individual selves, when I was in this running river of all-knowing knowledge, I was able to see what, you know, Paramahansa Yogananda and Hindu and Buddhist religions kind of allude to, that we have souls, but our souls are all connected together. And ultimately, another resource is Matthias De Stefano and the Gaia Channel does the initiation series. He talks about this, that here we're all divided out, but it's like a pyramid. And as you go up the pyramids, it's like our souls start to go back together and converge into the one. And then, you know, you could look at it the other way, right? Where we start to divide out to have these experiences that ultimately all just feed back to the experience for the one soul, the one entity, God, what, you know, whatever term that you would use for it. So in that moment, yeah, I definitely felt individual, but I also saw and remembered that connection that we all have, that ultimately I am my mother-in-law. My mother-in-law is me, and we're just going through these reincarnational cycles of experiencing things from different viewpoints together. It's complicated and there's so much to learn about it. And that's definitely one of those areas where I get excited. And if I see something that talks about that, I grab it up and want to read about it, because this is one of those areas where we need everybody's story. We need everybody to talk about it so that we can start to tie those threads together and understand it at a deeper level. Betty Guadagno is another person with a great story about that. Individuality, but experiencing it from multiple you know, viewpoint as multiple people in her life, you know, that in one life she's Betty, but in a different life she's in her sister, and in yet a different life she's her mom or her dad.
I know there's the research of Dr. Jim Tucker and Dr. Ian Stevenson where we live multiple lives, but you're saying we also live the life of our loved ones around us? The best way I understand this, I don't know if you know the story, The Egg, or if anyone has read the story, The Egg.
I haven't.
Very brief summary, but it's somebody dies and they meet what they call, refer to themselves as God. I guess that's a word some people resonate with. And basically the ending of it is that this person has been every single person on Earth. They will be every single person. So the people around them are simulations, I guess. And then they go live the life. And once they have lived the life of every single person who ever existed on Earth, they don't mention animals, but once they've lived every single person, they're like this God's only child. And then they go and become a God. Do you think it's somewhat like that? Or are we each living like maybe 100 lives?
That's a great question. I don't think there's a simulation to it. And when you think about being on the other side, you think about how there's no time. So if there's no time, then you can basically spend as much time as you want doing whatever you want to do. And so like with Christian Sundberg's pre-birth memories, right? And bumping into a soul who's had this amazing experience on Earth, and then Christian's soul says, oh, I want to go to Earth and be this person, and he plans it and he comes here. I mean, that's a great sample of the things that are occurring on the other side of the veil.
We are talking about Christian Sundberg, who also presented at the IONS conference, and he shares stories of his pre-birth memories and choosing to come to Earth and experience being a human. I've had him on this podcast in episode 85, titled Remembering Life, Pre-Birth, and Between Lives with Christian Sundberg, if you want to listen to his very interesting story.
So looking at it from that standpoint, then your soul can pick and choose who it wants to be, and it can try out different, like I can be Angela multiple times, and I can try to change what I'm doing. I can try to change my free will choices. Now, there are some arguments that say that there's not actually any free will. So again, this is where we need lots of information so we can start to understand better. But in my experience, you know, it's like coming here on vacation, and I laugh with my husband a lot. Like, it'll be a beautiful day like it is today. I'm looking out the windows in front of me and it's gorgeous, sunny. You know, the leaves are falling and they're orange and yellow and gold. It's like a brochure for Earth, you know, like you're on the other side and they're like, hey, look at this. You can go be Angela and you can see all these great sights and do all these fun things and you can experience all this stuff. And some of it's going to be really great and loving and sweet. And some of it is going to completely and absolutely hurt and suck. But you know what? You're on the other side where everything is wonderful and peace and light and happiness. So that part where it really hurts, you know, it's going to go by like that. And that no matter what happens, you could die. You're just going to end right up where you are making that decision. And you're going to be perfectly safe and happy and healthy. And you can just try that ride again. You can get back in line and hop back on.
I think there's a way probably as humans we can't fully understand this because I'm trying to wrap my head around what you're saying. Yeah. And it's very hard. So you could be Angela again. I could be Liz again and make different decisions. I can look back and be like, wow, that was a really dumb decision. I wish I hadn't done that. And we can go back to our lives again and try to redo those things after we pass. We're given a choice to redo this life as an option.
Yes, that's what I believe.
That is fascinating. I don't think I have heard that theory, but I haven't heard it mixed in with any, you know, other theories. I haven't heard anyone who's had an NDE say it, who's actually had experience. It's just been sort of a philosophical theory, I've heard. So yeah. I'm going to get a little back to the practical of exactly what happened. Then we can get more into the ideas. First of all, how did you come back to your body? Did you choose it? Were you forced?
I basically was forced. I wanted to stay. I was kind of right in a moment of making a decision. And my mother-in-law was there and she said she can't stay. She has to go take care of the children. And I woke up on the tilt table. So I wouldn't say she sent me back. I didn't feel a forcefulness of that, but that's how it happened. I heard her say that. And it was still partially coming out of her mouth. And I woke up on the table.
Before this, you didn't think there was an afterlife. You heard the NDE stories and you just thought it was a brain. Did you think there was any form of an afterlife? Did you believe in any religion, or were you just completely materialist secular the way I was?
Yeah, I kind of followed the Buddhist faith in that I felt that there was more to all of this. I had had quite a few experiences in my life that I didn't acknowledge. No one in my life talked about that kind of stuff. I didn't have words for it. I just knew what happened. I knew what I saw. So I had some tie and some seeds planted along the way that said, hey, there's more to this than meets the eye. But again, I didn't really spend any time thinking about it, reading about it. I just rolled on with life and was like, hey, you know, what happens, happens.
Would you be comfortable sharing any of those experiences that you had before?
Absolutely. When I was about 8 years old, I was playing with my dad in the driveway, and it was a asphalt driveway, and it had one of those little asphalt curves that was about 4 inches high. And there was a tree just on the other side of the curb, and a branch had broken off and was sticking out a couple of inches from the tree. And we were playing this game where I closed my eyes and I was trying to make my way to him by sound, and I tripped over the curb and I fell, and the branch from the tree went into my eye, you know, right above my eye into my skin. I was stuck on it and he had to pull me off. And I just remember my hands being covered with blood, his hands being covered with blood like dripping, and my mom freaking out. And then I woke up in the corner of the room. So they had laid me down on the couch and I could see my body on the couch. I could see my mom there, and I was in the room in the arms of an angel, another entity, and on the outside. So, I mean, now when I read about other things and think about it, it's kind of, it's hard to explain. So my body that had left my body, right? So my soul was in the corner of the room in the arms of an angel, protected on the outside of the house. So I could see outside the house without going outside the house, and my soul stayed in the room, but my 360 vision of my soul was able to see outside. I could see that an ambulance had arrived and my dad was out there. I could hear their conversation. And then I woke up on the sofa. So that was an out-of-body experience for sure. An NDE, I'm not sure. I mean, we could probably say it was an out-of-body experience. And then another big one was when my mother-in-law passed, who I saw on the other side. She had lung cancer and she was in hospice, and we were in the house. The nurse had said, today's the day. We arrived. She was not the warmest person. Like, she didn't like to be hugged really. And I just went and sat on the edge of her bed and I leaned down and I hugged her really tight. And I kissed her on the forehead and I said, it's okay. We're all here. You can go. And within 30 minutes, she had passed. In that time span, we were all sitting at a table right next to the bed. And I just felt something in my body, and I turned and I saw her silver cord, I'm guessing, going up. So it was like silver bubbles going up from the center of her chest right as she was passing and taking her last breaths. So yeah, just experiences like that. And I say to everyone now loud and proud, It's happening to you. It's happening all the time, every day to all of us. You just have to kind of let it in.
You said you were not as changed as some people are after NDE. You felt you were the same person in many ways, same work, same values, but the way you interacted with people was completely different. Am I right about that?
Yes. I look at things differently than I did as far as interactions with people. I'm much more compassionate. I used to be much more judgmental, not in the way that I would, get in someone's face and be like, why are you doing that? That's so different. You should do it this way. I didn't do that before. I would think it, but I didn't say it and I didn't act on it. Now I just completely skip that part. I'm like, wow, look at this person here who's, having, let's say you're in the airport and someone's, upset about their flight and they're screaming in front of everybody. Before I would have been like, wow, well, you should have been on time. And, now you're upsetting everybody. Now my thought process is much more like, oh, that's so sad. Look at this person who's so upset and what happened in their life before getting here right now that led to this. And, I hope that they find some peace and some calmness. And so that's how I've changed. It's just the whole thought process. And there's Seth Speaks. I talk about Seth a lot. I really connect with Seth channelings. I feel like what Seth says is a lot of what I experienced on the other side. And Seth talks about something called intervibrational touch. And you can do it with inanimate objects, but you can also do it with people. And really that's channeling. It's mediumship abilities. It's just that using our chi, our prana, that soul that exists within us to connect with other chi and prana inside other things. And I just do that much more easily now. A lot of people talk about when you have an experience that it opens you up to that, brings out that ability. I think it's really a removal or a pulling back of the veil, if you will, so that that's more accessible to us and not quite so hidden. I think it's a natural innate ability. What the intervibrational touch is doing is it's connecting me to other things and allowing more of that compassion, I think.
You also felt you were living other lives simultaneously right now on other planets as well as other lives here, or just on other planets?
I just saw on other planets. I didn't see myself living other lives here. And again, it would be that splitting off of the soul or souls that are more closely connected to my own, however you're comfortable thinking of that. But what I experienced is that, we have these souls which split from each other to experience these different lives. And this would be more my central soul, and then the splits from that. So Angela would be one adventure that soul is taking. And then these other entities that I saw would be other adventures that my soul is taking, seemingly simultaneously.
And are these other beings, they're completely different than any beings that we see on this planet? They've evolved completely different types of bodies, correct?
Yes. So other people have seen the same that I have seen. So one, she's a blue female being, no hair, a higher forehead, human-like face, but a very soft nose, so a flatter nose, very small body. So thinking about it and where I am with it right now is more like a gray, what we would call gray, but on this home planet, not gray, blue. So perhaps that's an aspect of our eyes and the light here, that they appear to be gray when they're here, but they're actually blue when they're home. Or maybe it's not a gray at all, and it's a totally different planet. I don't know how that works out, but a similar shape to a gray. But the eyes were more human again and blue. Maybe that's an aspect of the light. I don't know. And the other that I saw is an ant-like exoskeleton, red, a similar head shape to an ant, the same kind of legs that you've bent backwards rather than the knees going forwards towards the face. So yes, that took me a long time to come home to in my heart. You know, I knew that that was there, and it really helped to hear other people talk about that, because then it allowed Angela and the veiled part of me to say, hey, you know, this happened. I saw this.
As each of these beings physically die, the information then downloads or uploads, I should say, into who you fully are. And Angela is one part of this, just like Liz at 6 years old in June. That's just one tiny part of me. Like Liz, a first grader starting day camp at 6 years old, you know? So that was, you know, the way we speak about almost identities of very temporary states. And then that experience, actually every day, that experience goes into me as Liz. And it's kind of like that, like each of these are almost like a day or an experience going into our full consciousness. When we pass, we understand all that.
Yes, yes. That explains it very well. Another viewpoint on that, and there are several different books. Seth Speaks is one aspect of that. There's another Seth book, Dreams and Projections of Reality, I think is the title of that book, where we in our sleep leave our soul, leaves our body in an astral travel kind of way. And that there's a whole other aspect of astral travel there, right? That will be exposed here in just a second. So our soul leaves our body in our sleep, in our deep, deep sleep. And it actually connects back with the other side, with its central soul, with the one. And in that, you are sharing what has happened, you're processing what has happened, not so much from this side of things, but from that whole, I planned this and I came here to have this goal. And, you know, if what decisions should I make as Angela or Liz? They're going to help me achieve that. And you process that in your sleep. And then as your soul reconnects with your body here, it gets translated back into human understanding so that you then can make some decisions about, you know, tough things that are going on in your life, or even just, you know, more simple, average, everyday things. So from that standpoint, then it's, you know, there's a double thing going on there, that we're doing it all through our life, every single day. But then when we go home, it's like this huge, like you're saying, you know, like a huge upload of everything that you've experienced in its finality.
So why do we not remember these kinds of dreams when we wake up? I mean, I remember my dreams sometimes, but they're not that. I wish they were.
Yeah, I know. It's so complicated. And my take on that is that we don't remember it so that we can live this life just as we are. I think if we came here knowing all of what you know on the other side, there wouldn't be the growing and learning that we do here. We have to separate ourselves from that to be able to do the things we do. I mean, if we think about people who are here and they're living these lives that are creating chaos and pain for a lot of people, which has its role. I mean, if that's what we come here to experience, to have this different life to learn from, we have to have people who are mean. So, you know, I think that those people couldn't do that if they remembered that they were this wonderful, loving being. You know, it'd be very hard to make those choices I definitely would love to read anything about people's experiences with that, about what you're asking right here. How does the veil work? How does it descend on a quantum physics level? How does it descend on a mental level? Christian talks a little bit about that. I would love to hear people talk about and share their personal experiences on the other side about why. Why do we have this veil? Why are we living these different lives outside of just having experiences for the ultimate growth of the one? And if we're supposed to be having, this is a question, if we're supposed to be having these experiences so that we can awaken and the earth populace can, rise into this wonderful state of living together in oneness and happiness and not having pain and suffering anymore, then why did we even start doing this in the first place? Why aren't we just living on the other side, living our happy, peaceful lives?
I wonder that a lot. I'm like, wait, it seems like we're almost going backwards when we come here.
Yes.
I guess no one really knows that. And I think Christian probably gave the best answer that he felt the discarnate consciousness that he met before he ever was a human. He just said that it was such a pure consciousness and had a depth. And they said to Christian, well, I was a human, try that. And so, that's the closest insight I've had, but
you ever wonder what mediums do with their free time? How about a 30-something-year-old gay medium living in New York City? Well, in this podcast, you're about to find out. Welcome to Ghost Daddy, a place where LGBTQ+ spiritual people and our cis-hetero allies, of course, have a place to just be themselves and spread their wisdom. This is the new face of spirituality. None of that love and light, toxic positivity crap. So pour yourself a vodka soda, open up your mind, and start listening. You can listen to the Ghost Daddy podcast anywhere where you listen to podcasts.
Hi, can I ask all of you listening a favor? That would be so helpful. Would you mind rating and reviewing this podcast on whatever app you're listening? Even just clicking the star button to rate would be so helpful. With lesser known podcasts, ratings make a huge difference in the algorithm and whether new listeners can even find this podcast. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. I want to ask you then about your NDE. Why do you think it was real and not a brain coping with the terror?
That fixed it.
I just lost Angela for a few minutes, which is normally something I would edit out, but I'm keeping this part in because this is an example of how near-death experiencers seem to affect electronics. And I have had so many issues recording on both Zencaster and Zoom with near-death experiencers, and overall, they are the only ones I've had issues with. I'm just going to tell you, and I'm going to leave this, I think, in. I never have had any problems with Zencaster. Every experiencer, often people after NDEs have issues with electronics. And I, the first time I've ever had issues now, it's with every experiencer has had an issue of some sort recording.
Yes. At the conference, so Kim Clark Sharp was speaking in the main ballroom and PMH Atwater was in there. And in the past, they've just, when those two get together, there are electrical issues. We've actually crashed all of the computers at the front desks before at the hotels. So this time, Kim was right in the middle of her talk and she set off the fire alarm. And there was no other reason for it other than that. So, yes, we definitely have electrical sensitivities. Something changes, and clearly on a physical level with our bodies. When I came back, that's actually what made me start Googling stuff. I, I had come home. I was really sick. I was really just focused on trying to heal and get back to my normal life. I had two little kids and a job. But every time I would touch my laptop or my phone, it would burn my hands. And then the light bulbs kept going out around the house. And so, of course, you know, like a good American, I Googled what was going on. And that's what led me to IONS.
Do you still notice electronic issues? Obviously, Zencastr just crashed. It made this weird noise. I don't know if you heard it, but it made this like really weird static noise when you went out.
Yeah, I do still have issues. Light bulbs are not burning out the way that they used to, but I have to have a special glass thing on my phone and a special case. And yeah, I basically don't use my laptop. So I have a keyboard and a mouse and all that. And that kind of separates me from it to be comfortable. I've tried, you know, they have like special trays and covers and things, but they just don't work. And it's not fun to sit there trying to communicate with the rest of the world through the internet when you've got this weird, creepy, buzzy feeling crawling through your hands and up your arms. It's a really unpleasant feeling.
And you never had that before your NDE, and then afterwards you'll feel that when you try to work with electronics.
Yes, yes. And it's been years. I mean, it was 2015 when this happened, and it's 2023 now, and it's still a problem for me. Yeah. And yes, I mean, I definitely am one of those people who I lose the internet connection, I have Zoom problems, and if I'm upset, and this is a common factor with a lot of experiencers too, if you're upset about something, it's worse. I'm very connected with nature and trees, and probably about 18 months ago or so, they were cutting down this whole swath of trees along the road out here because they were crawling into the power lines, and I was really upset about that, more upset than I thought I could be. And I basically couldn't do anything online that week because every time I would try to connect with someone over Zoom, it would crash.
Obviously, IONS, you can be honest and explain, but how do you navigate that with in your regular job?
That is my regular job. So I don't have to, I only work. So when I had my NDE, I was a teacher. I actually had to leave that job because I have an illness that it's an orthostatic hypotension. So when I stand up, my blood pressure drops. And when you're a teacher, you basically have to stand all day. So I was standing up and my blood pressure was just going down all day long, which explains why I didn't feel very well while I was teaching. And so I stay home and, you know, I take care of the kids. And one of your early questions was, how did I end up at IONS? And yeah, I don't work anymore. And Chuck Sweetrock put out a volunteer call for someone to help with the website. I had had experience doing that. And so I responded to that. And that's how I got involved.
I was asking you when we lost connection, why do you think your NDE was real and not to help cope with the terror of dying?
You just know. I know a lot of people say that. It's hard to hear when you're not the one who got to experience the just knowing. But when you're there, you know, because coming back here, it's like everything has this gray film. It's like looking through a dirty window. I think that's a good way of thinking about it. You know, if you look through a dirty window, you can see that it's pretty out there, but it's not the same as being out there and being in this beautiful, rich moment. So there's that. There's like the physical. When you're there, it looks more real. It's brighter. It's more vibrant. You don't have a body, but you feel it more. But then there's also just your soul knowing you're at home. This is where you're really from. There's that, I want to say mental connection, but I didn't have a brain because I left my body back on Earth. But, you know, I think that's a word we have here that can help people understand that it's like a mental connection as well. So there's a realness to it, a richness to it, sensuousness to it, not in a sexual way, but in a, like, it's delicious and true. And, you know, it's those moments when you're in life and you realize you're in love and you just No one can explain to you why you're in love. You can give reasons for it. You just know. You just have that knowing inside of you, a truthfulness to it.
You were there, and you know, what was your vision like? I've heard that people see 360 degrees, and hearing you talk about how it's almost like a gray, looking through a dirty kind of gray window here.
I could see like I see here. I saw the tunnel, which had this dark, velvety look to it. No light, but somehow I could still see what I needed to see. And as I approached the space where the white light is, it was like being on a train and entering a station. So my body went into this space of white light, which was no floor, no ceiling, no confines or boundaries of space that we might define here, just filled with white light and kind of a soft, fogginess to what would be the edges of the light or where you would look in the light. But when I looked at my family there, they looked like my family. So they looked just like we look now with clothing on. And when I had my experiences where I would go off and see the past or the present or the future, it looked like here. It felt like here. It sounded like here. And when I went to the spaces which were different planets in different dimensions, it was just the entity that I saw. So I didn't see anything around them. It was just black behind them. But they looked like you looked to me. I mean, they were a real 3D, living, moving creature that you could reach out and touch and know that that realness was there. So my sight was the same as it is now. I didn't have any difference to it other than that, you know, it was just more. It was more than it is now.
That's very encouraging. What would you say was the most fascinating aspect? Was there anything that just shocked you when you came back? Or even now you're still like, what the fuck was that?
Yeah, actually, I was thinking about the title of your podcast. And for me, you know, it's what the fuck just happened. But for me, it was like, what the fuck just happened? That's what happened. I woke up on the table and all I wanted was to go back. That's how real it was. And that's how much I knew this is also temporary. You know, I had kids, but from the other side, when I looked at my kids, I could see their future and I knew they were going to be okay. And I could see multiple versions. Like, if I stay, this is what will happen. And this is how they'll experience life. And if I go back, this is what will happen. And this is how they'll experience life. And I knew that's like a breath away on the other side. It's an entire lifetime here. But from the other side, it was just like, oh, what? But that's a breath away and they're going to be fine. People talk about how it's ethereal and ineffable. And that's how I feel about it still. I look back at it and it's hard to explain with human words. And it's hard to sometimes believe that it happened. I know that it happened, but you know, I can look around at life now and we're so deeply under this veil, which hides us from it all, that it can be very easy, I think, to step away from it and say, whoa, wait a minute, was that real? The hardest part for me, I think, is that it's the staying with it. You know, meditating every day helps, but navigating my way through the conversations with people, because it's so much a part of me now that it's all I want to read about. It's all I want to talk about. And when you're in a life with people who they don't have that experience, they're not living that life and they don't want to talk about it 24 hours a day, you have to navigate that. And that's a very hard aspect of being an experiencer. As far as my experience and what was hardest to deal with that, I think it's been seeing myself as these other non-human entities and finding other people out there who've had a similar experience, not encountering them here. That's very important to me too, but finding people who in their near-death experience, when they went back to themselves on the other side, they also saw themselves living these NHI existences in other dimensions, because that's a lot to process. There's a lot there that goes beyond just, how can that be easier? How can it be easier for me to accept that I'm this multidimensional, you know, being of light, living this life on this planet under this veil? That's somehow easier to process than being this non-human entity. I don't know, but that's where I am with it. I guess I'm just looking for some support in that area from other people. It's a lot easier to get the support about being this multidimensional being of light, because a lot more people have that experience, since that's our source, our original space. So when you go home, that's what everyone experiences.
During NDEs, you feel that most experiencers identify with that more. So you mentioned you got visions of your kids' futures. Have they panned out? Were your visions correct?
Yes. So I saw, and I have permission from my son to talk about this. I saw my son at the time. So I thought about my family, and I could look through a portal in the white light and see them here in the present. And they were kids. And I saw my son at the time, who identified as a girl and was named Lily. I saw Lily as a grown-up man, and it was like a flipping back and forth. So it was Lily, and then it was this man, and it was Lily and this man, and Lily and this man. I knew from a very young age that there was this connection with, you know, the masculine side. But then once my son grew up, he said, "Hey, Mom, I'm a boy," during a conversation, and has since transitioned and is now going by the name of Adam and living a male life. So yes, yeah, absolutely.
And good for him. And how lucky are we now that medicine has advanced enough where we can have the outward, make our physical bodies who match a lot more of who our souls are. That's really,
yeah.
I think that's a very lucky thing. That
it is, yeah.
I have a lot of appreciation for to be in this mm-hmm. time frame where we can do that, because it's new that it can be done so well. That's really interesting I would say a little veridical that you got that information.
Yeah. Looking back, I'm like, wow, on this side, there were so many little, you know, breadcrumbs. And so that when he said, you know, "Mom, I'm a boy," I was like, oh, yeah, well, yeah. I kind of do that. But then also having that support from that near-death experience was just wow. And I hope that other people can hear that and connect with that and find comfort in knowing that, you know, I was on the other side and I saw that this is the path and that it was comfortable and normal. And, you know, it's not a bad thing.
Why do you think some people have NDEs and some don't?
I don't have an answer for that. I feel like from a personal standpoint that my NDE is part of my journey. When I look back at how everything's played out, it's like my life lined me up to be in the moments I'm in now. So when Chuck asked for a volunteer for IONS to help with websites, I had been doing that. I had examples I could send him. So my life had brought me to that moment. But additionally, it had brought me to that moment through that experience that I had through this health crisis. So it's that intersection of all these different things coming together and just standing in a moment knowing, wow, without any one of those pieces, like a synchronicity, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be having this conversation. I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing. And this is where I'm comfortable. This is where I'm supposed to be. So perhaps it's something that we build into our storyline, like a pre-birth memory. That's a great question to ask Christian. But I don't know, Liz. It's that complication again, right? Of, well, if we have free will, then we could have oopsie daisies, right? Where, oops, you had an accident because someone had some free will and you died as a part of that accident and you just ended up on the other side. Or maybe it's less random than that and it's all planned out in every single NDE that people have had. Is very purposeful. I don't know.
And then through working at IONS, you hear so many other stories. Are there any other NDEs that you're able to share that you just thought were the most remarkable or evidential or just really moved you in some way?
Yes, quite a few. I mean, I think every single one of them, you know, I connect with in some way. A very memorable one we were just talking about before we started recording, and that's Leonard Martin. He died for 24 hours and woke up in the morgue. So he wasn't resuscitated. He woke up on his own. And they have documentation. So they have the transcripts from texts where family members were texting friends and saying, Leonard has passed, medical records, all of it. He has all of it. Benny Todd Tolman is in a similar situation where, you know, he was gone for quite a while. But then there are the very, very transformative experiences. My friend Ray Catania was a mobster, worked for the mob, been in shootouts and all kinds of crazy things. And he died during a fire, was rescued, had an NDE in that experience. And like a lot of experiencers, you know, it took a long time for him to fully integrate it into his life and make it his lifestyle. But, you know, now he's a spiritual coach. He's a medium, very well respected. He's a best-selling author, fully and completely living in this spiritual life. So went from being a mobster carrying a gun and serving like a boss, a mob boss, to living a spiritual life. Dropped it all, made a complete 180.
I had Ray Catania on as a guest, and you can listen to his story in episode 84, The Atheist into the Afterlife.
Another is Betty Guadagno, one of our community's beloved people. Similar situation. That woman is transformation walking. She was living on the streets. She was addicted to drugs, if it was available, she took it. She was basically a madam, right? So she would sell people to get more drugs. And she had a Kundalini experience. So she didn't have, I think maybe she did have a near-death experience, but she had all the symptoms of a Kundalini awakening. And now she's a recovery specialist. So she helps people coming out of their addiction. And then she also works for us doing webinars and a podcast and very loving, very sweet, very spiritual person. So again, complete shift from where she was before. So beyond just, you know, your interactions with people, these people, Betty especially, immediately dropped everything. So she basically woke up from this Kundalini awakening, walked out of the place she was in, went straight to a drug rehab center, got herself back to a healthy normal, read everything she could read, and just 3-4 years on is where we are. This is where she's living her life. So it was like that, instantaneous. She literally got up off the bed where she had her experience and walked into a brand new life.
Yeah, and I've met Betty. She's just, it's so hard for me to even imagine the other life because she just radiates like love and healing and warmth and so kind. And I would think people who've lived that life who then have an NDE, I mean, to have someone go through that, it's such a lack of judgment, I'm sure, that she has for other people. And the more, you know, you kind of opened with you no longer feel judgment, if we could stop judging, which sometimes is really hard because sometimes we're judging people who are really, really mean or hurting other people or hurting their children. That's really hard not to judge.
I do feel like judgment has a place as a person, though, living on earth, because that's how we protect ourselves. If we especially go, you know, back into history when we didn't have, you know, houses and this kind of civilized protective society, we had to have abilities to read another person and know, am I sick in this situation or not? I mean, even now walking down the street, we have to go into that intuition state, that intuitive state, that inner vibrational touch, and reach out and make a reading on how safe is this physical body of mine right now. So we need it. And yet that's another hard part about being an experiencer or being someone living in this spiritual world, really for anyone, is it's so dichotomous of, I need to be judgmental for my safety, but then I'm not supposed to be judgmental. And how do you bring those two together in a way that is still compassionate and loving and kind and not, I don't know. Again, complicated.
I mean, I hear you just from even studying this. I feel I've changed in those areas. I'm sure nowhere near the level you do, but you can almost put it into two categories. Like, I'm going to have real compassion, even if you're a horrible person, or treat others horribly. Would I be any better if I went through what you did in life? It's really easy to say I'm a good person when I had a loving family and a good start. Also, I can be like, I still need to protect myself from you, and I don't want you in my life, and I need to take myself out of the situation. But I can also have empathy and feel like a sympathy and care instead of a hatred or superiority, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
I can't always do that. I mean, I'm not, but I think as an ideal. I've heard people after NDEs feel very raw in the world and sort of can feel everyone else's emotions, and there's sort of a boundary is gone. Is that true? And if so, how is that? What is that like for you?
I think that varies from person to person. When Dave Bennett came back from his experience, when he would look anyone in the eye, he could see them. He could see their soul in there and feel it and experience it more soul to soul. And I tend not to really look people in the eyes either for that reason, because now when I look, I'm just more open, So there's more of that connection, I think, to them. And I don't think that the person I'm looking at feels it, but I feel it. And that can be hard to process. I had a friend ask me recently a very interesting question, which was, he said, so you see auras, what's it like when someone's drinking coffee? Does their aura change? And what I shared with him is that I do see auras, but I try not to, because I feel like it's looking at someone naked. Like, I don't want people looking at my aura. It's dependent upon how I'm doing and how I'm feeling. And it's going back to that judgment thing again, right? Of, as an experiencer and opening up and being able to connect with someone, you have access to them that they haven't given you permission for. And so I try to, keep a barrier there. So I've learned ways to not really look at that. So when I see an aura, it's more when I close my eyes, so when I blink. And I've learned to just kind of let that go. I think my soul is very much in control of that, because like when I look at trees, I just see the aura. So I think I'm picking and choosing at a very deep level with how deeply I engage with that. Yeah, I guess it's more that privacy issue for me of, I want to make sure that I am being respectful of other people's interaction in my ability to more about them through this opening. And we want to say special abilities a lot, these special abilities that you get when you have an experience, but it's not a special ability. It's who you actually are. And it's the removal of this boundary that we've created as humans.
And I think you have a unique perspective, because not only did you have an NDE, you also work at ION, so you're surrounded by other people's stories. What would you say is a complete difference between your NDE and others? And what would you say is, or what makes your NDE unique? And then also, what would you say are common threads of NDEs?
I'll start with the common threads. I would say the core of an NDE, from what I've seen, is this connection with the love and the light It depends on your background. People see what they need to see to have comfort. So what I'm learning is that there are kind of like different levels. Like I mentioned, I was kind of just in an entryway, a welcoming area. Other people go farther in. And some people see gardens. Some people see an entity that looks like whatever godlike creature they expect to see. You know, people in the Eastern countries tend to see gardens because they're very nature-centric. Some people see cities. So as far as that goes, that's very varied in that what we see when we go there is dependent upon your culture, your upbringing, your religious values. Another great reference for that is Kathy McDaniel's book. She had a distressing NDE and she talks a bit about that. Common core, though, is the feeling of love and of being at home and that just knowing that this is where we're really from and connecting back with your soul and the one overarching soul. That's a commonality. And then, you know, being in the all-knowing Akashic Records, Book of Life, that is another space where a lot of people have experienced that, but it's varied. That's not something that everyone experiences. So that's one thing that kind of differentiates the experience that I had is that I was in that space of just being able to remember so freely for my mind to be able to just so freely travel from one space to another as I thought about and remembered who I truly am. And then, you know, seeing my children, seeing their futures, that was, I think, probably a rather unique moment. In my research, it seems seeing myself as a non-human entity existing in other spaces seems to be a more unique kind of experience. And then also seeing, you know, the future of Earth. So I saw a couple of things there. One, that we have another war, which we're kind of heading towards right now. That is, you know, a central feature of that is migration and how we have so many different cultures moving into other cultures and these cultures get angry about it. But then past that, that we do all eventually come to a living as one in harmony. So that's a little less.
On Earth?
Yes. Yeah. And that's a little more rare. I mean, people do see the future, definitely. But to see the future is a little more rare.
Do you see the harmony in like 200 years or in our lifetimes after? Because the war seems like it's starting. It's been a pretty scary, tragic month.
Yeah. I did not have a feel for that, really. And you know, I didn't remember everything when I came back, as I think I'm not supposed to. But yeah, I don't know, 200 years feels pretty good. That feels right when I think about where I was in the present at that moment and then reaching forward. It wasn't like so far out, it was ridiculous. It was like we have this war, but then the migration portion of it actually plays a part in transforming into this unified culture of understanding that we can't have these differences, that we're actually all one, and that these moments and these sharing spaces of being able to talk about how millions of people are having these experiences and remembering our true selves, you know, helps to lay the foundation for that.
That sounds really hopeful. Hi, I'm interrupting the podcast episode for this week's listener question. If you have a question you want me to answer, send it to hello@wtfjusthappened.net and put question of the week in the subject. I know I usually say first names, but if you want to be completely anonymous, let me know. And feel free to reach out anyway, even if you don't have a question. I can't wait to hear your questions and hear from you. So coming to the end, is there anything I didn't ask you that you'd like me to ask or that you'd like to share?
Thank you for asking that. I think we've covered a lot here. It has been so much fun talking to you. We had a great time talking before we even started recording. Yeah, thank you for this, Liz.
Thank you. Yeah, and I'll be seeing you, I guess, next year at the conference. When is the conference again, if any of our listeners want to go?
So IANS gets together every Labor Day weekend, so the end of August, early September. Next year, we're going to be in Scottsdale, Arizona at a beautiful resort. And it's just a wonderful place to be able to openly and comfortably talk about anything that has to do with spiritually transformative experiences, any kind of adjacent topics, to get your questions answered, but to also live for a day or 4 days in this community of people who just, they get it. You know, it's a comfortable place. No question is off the books. Not one single question is off the book.
Kind of a dream for me, wanting to ask questions about this all day. And I will also add, as someone who doesn't even really consider myself especially spiritual or able to feel energies, it was powerful. I felt something physiologically there that I haven't really felt before. It was, especially at the dance party, it was so interesting. And so, yeah, sort of a powerful energy. Where can our listeners follow you, find you?
Yeah, I don't really have anything out there. I'm just Angela at IANS.org. So if you have questions or you want to chat about this, happy to. If you have any questions about my experience, I see this as an ongoing conversation. If you heard something today and you were like, oh my gosh, I saw that or I read a book about it, please, please, please share that with me. So very easy email address, Angela@IANS.org.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
To get more information on what the fuck just happened, go to WTFjustHappened.net. There you can order my book, WTF Just Happened, A Sciencey Skeptic Explores Grief, Healing, and Evidence of an Afterlife. You can learn all about how I came to conclude that there most likely is an afterlife. But you can also learn about the early stages of my grief and the amazing, fascinating people I met along the way. You can read about how much I harassed the mediums and scientists trying to get evidence to see if the mediums were cheating and see if what everyone was saying actually was true. You can also subscribe to our newsletter to stay updated on any new developments and any interesting new what the fuck updates. So if you enjoyed this episode, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. It makes such a difference, especially for a new podcast like this one. And if any of you have had a crazy what the fuck yourself, have any questions, feedback, or just want to say hey, reach out on either Instagram at WTF_just_happened_, or email me at hello@WTFjustHappened.net. I love hearing from all of you. It makes my day hearing your stories and questions and feedback and all of it. And remember, you don't have to draw any final conclusions as you wonder, what the fuck just happened?